How often do you think of yourself as beautiful or handsome? Choose whichever word you feel best. Think about it for a moment. How often do we think about that? Think about our beauty or how handsome we are, how good we are. I don't think we think about it very often, or we think about it too much, that we spend all of our life focused on how we look and how we present ourselves and what we mean to others. Now, I want you to imagine something with me. Imagine there's someone who knew you so incredibly well that just by looking at you, they saw your beauty. And you knew it. You knew it so well that your whole life revolved around that person's perspective on you. Not as something confining or controlling, but something that brought out the goodness within you. How would you act? What would you do? What would you look like? How would you comport yourself in the world? I think we'd all be radically changed. And I think for some of us, we go, oh, I know who that is. That's easy. That's my spouse. I want you to think again. Often with our spouses see what they want to see in us, or they see the good things. I'm talking about something so radically different. It gets down to the very core of who we are and brings out that goodness. The reason why I bring this up is today's readings center around the goodness of who we are as human beings, our body, minds, and souls, guiding us to see all three of those parts come together to really show the goodness within us. Today's second reading from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians shows the nature of the body. So often our bodies are characterized in strange ways. We like to present what we want to be. We like to make ourselves the way we want people to see us. And I think the best way to describe the internal challenges that we have with that is from the Big Bang Theory. A little hesitant to quote them, but it really works well in this case. So Penny is trying to cheer up Sheldon, who is upset because he just lost his job. And she said, I know, let's go shopping for clothes. So they're in the clothing store, and Sheldon says, how is shopping for new clothes going to help me? Penny responds by saying, well, whenever I'm feeling depressed or sad, I get a new blouse or a cute skirt. And Sheldon responds saying, wouldn't you just be the same sad, depressed person with a new blouse or a cute shirt? And she said, yes, that's why I buy shoes. Sheldon, but the point remains, we just keep going to the same problems. But do we ever get to experience the real goodness of ourselves? The real goodness that permeates all of that, starting with the body, the nature of the body. Often we think of the body only as an instrument or a tool. It gets the things we need done. You know, we get to wander around and do stuff. We get to go explore the world. We see the goodness of who we are just because we can do things. How often do we think of the body as an instrument for prayer, an avenue through which we experience God's grace, a way to come to experience what God is doing in our lives through our bodies? Very simple things. Kneeling. We don't think much of it. We think it kind of hurts our knees. Nevertheless, the very fact of kneeling is a chance for us to use our bodies to encounter God. Even simple things of the Mass, like prayer, speaking, eating things, like the Eucharist, are all ways the body guides us to seek God. St. Paul's words today are quite a bit more sharp, as he says it's not just the body as a physical thing. As we cultivate and use our bodies, they guide us into prayer and discipline, that through them, we not only come to realize God, but something even more powerful. We are temples of the Holy Spirit. Our bodies can be ways for us to know the goodness God has given us, to experience mercy, to experience grace, to be able to go out into the world with a new sense of who we are, not just projecting what we want to be, but the true identity of ourselves, created in the goodness of God, in His image and likeness. So I challenge you, spend some time reflecting on your bodies. Yes, they may be aching and painful right now. You might have issues. That's part of it too. We come to identify with Christ who is crucified. Sometimes they bring us great joy in the things we can do. Great. Enjoy those moments. They are moments of encounter with God who made you. The second part of who we are is our minds. And that comes out in our gospel for today in kind of neat ways. This is such a strange gospel. The Gospel of John is always hard for me to proclaim because it's so clunky and strange in its language and also has such a dark tone to it. It's almost as like we're always waiting for that end goal of Jesus' crucifixion. Everything just seems to be out of order until that moment. But in this Gospel, we have some very key figures. We have John the Baptist, we have Andrew, and Simon Peter. What are they doing? They're waiting. They have spent a good chunk of their lives reading through the scriptures, reading through the prophecies of the Messiah. They have cultivated their minds in such a way where they know what to look for. They know the signs. Think of it this way. If they had no idea what they're looking for, they wouldn't have done anything. But they're there for a reason. They're there because they saw the signs in John. They saw the signs of the baptism. They saw what was going on and wanted to see it for themselves. They had prepared for this moment. But even more, it goes deeper than that. In the sense of using their minds, they encounter Jesus, who says to them a very key and beautiful question. What are you looking for? He calls out in them what's on their minds. They know what they're looking for. They're looking for the Messiah. He's also challenging them to say, what signs are you looking for? In the same token, he's also saying, what in your life are you looking for? What would bring you the peace and joy? What is the event that would change your life? What is it there in your minds that brought you to this moment? And they respond, where are you staying? Another strange question. There's always great strange questions in John's gospel. Where are you staying? And there was no response. They followed him and they stayed. They stayed the whole night. The entirety of the rest of the night was cultivated by them sitting there by the feet of Jesus, listening to him, letting them inform their minds, letting him teach them his ways, letting them come to know this is truly the Messiah. The same thing works for us. Our minds are one of our greatest gifts. And through our mind, we can ponder the deeper truths of the world. We can come to know the universe. We can come to know God, his prophecies, what he has done. And by cultivating our minds, we can ward off any of the challenges of the world. By knowing what's in the core of our minds and what we can do with our thoughts, we can change the very attitudes of people. We can change the world itself. It's amazing what's at the powers of our minds. So, in this way, John is encouraging us to focus our minds, to look for God, to seek him with our minds, to cultivate them in such a way where we come to know the signs. Where is God? What is he doing? And to ponder the deeper mysteries that they may bring us joy. This is what God has done, and I get it. I can see him. I know him. The last part of our bodies, the ones we often ignore, is our souls. Our first reading from the first book of Samuel is a great example of what the characteristics of the soul are and the challenges they face. We have two major figures. We have Eli and Samuel. Eli is a rather tragic figure. He is tragic in many ways. He was tasked with the care of the ark, which is a cool thing. He basically is taking care of the entire meeting tent, all the sacrifices, and gets to go in the very presence of God. What an incredible gift. Didn't quite go the way he wanted. So here he is. He's probably about 70, 80 years old right now. He had two sons. His two sons decided that they liked this new position of being priest in this temple meeting tent thing, and so they started taking extra cuts of meat that they weren't supposed to. God got incredibly mad and killed them both. So here's Eli, having spent his entire life caring for the Ark of God, caring for the people of Israel through sacrifices, and has lost everything. His sons have died, he is there just doing his job, he is old, and now his sight is failing him. In so many ways, that image of his sight failing him teaches us a great deal about his soul. It's not just the physical sight that matters. We're now talking about spiritual sight. If we read the rest of the passage, it would tell us that visions were infrequent. God didn't speak very often. He spent long periods of time just going through the routine of offering the sacrifices and doing what he's supposed to without ever hearing God or feeling that consolation. There's a great deal of sadness in Eli's life, and is causing this spiritual blindness. He doesn't look anymore. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to find God. He wants to just die and make it be done. In contrast to Eli, we have Samuel. Samuel is a spunky little energetic boy. He was given here by his mom about 6 years prior, and he spent his entire life at the service of God, all of it. Here is Samuel, who has never encountered God. He lives in the meeting tent where God dwells, and he's never fully encountered God. Think of the beautiful images that go with Samuel. We first meet him sleeping in the sanctuary. They make a point. The light of the candle has not been dimmed yet. God's presence is still there, and he's asleep before God. Here is a beautiful image that sets off this whole new saga. Here he is sleeping before God, and we expect God would speak to him. And he does. He calls out, "Samuel, Samuel," to which Samuel has no response. He assumes, why would God be calling me? He's never called me before. What does it sound like? Is this not how we often feel too? The core of our soul, we want God. We want to be in his presence. We want to hear his voice, but we have no idea what it sounds like. We have no idea what we're looking for. So naturally, and any of us would probably do the same thing, he gets up and runs to Eli. "You called me." "No, I didn't. Go back to sleep." Only on the third time, as Eli has had very little experience with God in many years and not sure what to do, does it click. Oh, God's calling him. This is how you respond. So he gives him the general formula. "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." As soon as Samuel goes back, he's called again, now a fourth time, interestingly enough, and he says the proper words. We missed another chunk, unfortunately. The next chunk is this long prophecy of what Samuel will do, become the great prophet of Israel, establish God's reign again, and bring the people back to fidelity. But what we get is something more profound. Samuel has heard God. He knows his voice. His soul has been ready, prepared for this moment. He's been hopeful, waiting there in the sanctuary. The same thing works for our souls. Are our souls ready to hear God? Do we want them to hear God? Are we spending time with God enough to let our souls be cultivated by him so they're ready and prepared? Are we excited and energetic to seek God? Or are we like Eli and be like, "Oh, not another thing. I have too much to do right now"? So let Samuel be a good example to us of readiness, attentiveness, excitement, joy for the Lord, letting ourselves be cultivated, changed, adapted, ready, so that when God encounters us, he can encounter us in full and our soul will be ready to respond. Today's readings are a great example to show the fullness of who we are. Our bodies help us to encounter God, as our physicalness lets us touch things, interact with the world, and come to know God. Our minds can be cultivated in such a way where we know the mysteries, we know who God is, and we come to recognize him. And our souls help us to encounter him. They teach us the very value of God coming into the depths of our being and calling out of us the joy of who we are, the goodness he made in us. So let's reflect on the goodness of who we are and live it with joy. God made us good for a reason, so that everyone can see his goodness in us. It's not about us. It's about the joy that God has given us, about the goodness we've been made to be. It's about God being present in the world and shown through us.